it singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly all your life. You were only waiting for this moment to arise. You were only waiting for this moment to arise. You were only waiting for this moment to arise.
All right, San Francisco. Drum roll, please. Here it comes. Are you ready? Are you ready? I can't hear you. Oh, yeah. I forgot. This is the radio. Okay, well, here it goes. This is Numb by Dallas Woodburn on KSFS.
Numb. Soon after, I notice while washing my face in the shower that the palms of my hands have a new texture, rough and bumpy. I turn off the water, squeeze drops from my hair, and step out of the tub. I wipe my face with a towel and peer at my hands. The palms are crisscrossed with dozens of lines, like the skin of an old woman. My fingertips normally get pruney if I stay in the shower too long. But I took a quick shower this morning, not even bothering to shave my legs, and both of my palms are scrunched up prunes. Your hands have no oil glands, Dr. Anderson says over the phone. I've known her a dozen years. We went to high school together. But she's using her nonchalant doctor tone. It turns me into a patient, just one of many patients. It makes her seem like a stranger. No oil glands means your skin expands and prunes up, she explains. So there is something wrong with me? Beg pardon? You're saying my hands are supposed to have oil glands? No, no, everyone's hands are like that. It's nothing to worry about. Oh. I gently rub my thumb across the alligator texture. Already the pruniness is melting away. They are turning back into regular palms. I feel foolish. Sorry to bother you, Val, I say. I just thought it was strange. It's no bother. I'm glad you called. Her voice softens. How are you holding up? Fine, I'm doing fine. Thanks. The next morning, I wake up and my right hand is pins and needlesy. I must have slept on it wrong, I tell Gary. We sit across from each other at the breakfast table with our Cheerios and coffee, reading the newspaper to avoid eye contact. I massage my right hand with my left, gently squeezing each fingertip. My nails turn a brief white as my fingers press down, then immediately flood with pink as the pressure is released. Do you want me to rub it? Gary asks. But I'm already half up out of my chair, carrying my bowl and mug to the sink. Oh no, it's okay, I say. I don't want him touching me. That day, I was exhausted. The bathwater felt warm and soothing on my bare skin. Laura was napping in her nursery across the hall. I didn't fall asleep. My eyes were closed, but my ears were not. I would have heard her crying. She didn't cry. She didn't, or I would have heard. The tingling has spread to my toes. I sit down next to Gary on the couch, prop my feet up on the coffee table, and wiggle my toes in my socks. I watch them move, but it is like they are someone else's toes. Gary sets down the latest issue of Golf Digest and meets my eyes. His hair is sticking up like tufts of dead brown grass. Call the doctor, he says. But I just called her a couple days ago. She said it's nothing to worry about. Gary reaches for my hand. I let him hold it for a minute. Then I squeeze his hand and pull mine away. I stand up. Honey, Gary says, do you think? He pauses. I am already walking away into the living room, so I pretend not to hear. He doesn't finish the sentence. Laura was 16 months, 3 weeks, and 5 days old. I said she had Gary's blue eyes. Gary said she had mine. She was beautiful. When I held her, she would nuzzle her face into my neck, and I could feel her soft eyelashes blinking against my skin. The numbness has spread from my hands up my forearms, past my elbows, all the way to my shoulders. My limbs are dead weight. Dr. Anderson requests a blood test. I might have diabetes, a thyroid problem, Lyme disease. The nurse tells me to squeeze a foam ball and taps on my arm, searching for a vein to mine. You should drink more water, she scolds. I inherited my mother's veins, I tell her. They're naturally small. I'm sorry. I think of Laura's tiny veins, blue beneath her translucent baby skin. The nurse misses my vein the first time, but I don't feel the prick of the needle. The blood tests come back normal. Meanwhile, the numbness continues to spread from my toes, enveloping my feet, my ankles, my shins, surrounding my knees, inching up my thighs. Dr. Anderson sends me to a neurologist who tapes electrodes to my legs and arms and sends jolts of electricity through my numb body. Yep, he murmurs. That's right. Good. As my limbs jerk on the examining table. I feel like a marionette puppet. Everything looks normal, the neurologist says. On the wall, beside his diploma from medical school, he has a picture of three little girls with light brown hair and freckles. Those are my daughters, he says, following my gaze. Kids, he sighs. They grow up so fast, don't they? My smile feels like a grimace. Yes, I say. They sure do. It is mid-afternoon when I arrive home, the sun slanting through the bare-limbed winter trees, already close to setting. I run the bathwater, clenching and unclenching my hands underneath the warm spray from the tap. After a few moments, I climb into the tub. The water steadily rises, slowly covering my goose-pimpled legs and stomach. I bend my knees so they are two islands. I lay my head back and look at the ceiling. It was just like this. The water is loud, roaring into the tub, but not so loud that I wouldn't have heard her crying. That day, I was exhausted. I leaned my head back and closed my eyes. When I woke up, the warmth had faded from the bathwater. Still, I wasn't alarmed. I hadn't been away more than 20 or 30 minutes. I slowly toweled myself dry, slipped into a t-shirt and sweatpants, and tiptoed into Laura's nursery. She was asleep. The bathwater rises higher and higher, creeping up my arms, covering my breasts. My palms are wrinkled prunes, like they were that day when I climbed from the bath. Now, I take a deep breath and let my head sink under the water. That day, I bent down and kissed Laura's forehead. And then everything shifted, like in a dream when you suddenly realize something is off. The house you are in is not your house. Your bed is in the wrong place. Your car out front is a different color and model than it's supposed to be. It was as if my entire life up to that moment, up to that single kiss upon my daughter's forehead, was the weight of an elephant balancing on the head of a pushpin. The balance shifted, and everything came down in a colossal violent tumbling when I realized Laura was not breathing. Underwater, I feel the pressure building inside me. I come up, gasping for breath, clutching my numbness around me like a threadbare baby's blanket.
All right, that was Numb by Dallas Woodburn here on KSFS. What an awesome story. My name is John Becker. This is The Word. I'm going to play a song for you guys. And then when we come back, I'm actually going to have the author of that story, Dallas Woodburn, on the air. And we're going to talk to her a little bit about, you know, what that story we just heard and what she does. So stay tuned. Right now I'm going to play Half Jack by the Dresden Dolls. I'm going to try to keep the mood a little bit. I don't have any smooth jazz. I'm thinking smooth jazz is really the mood for this kind of literary version. You know, my show has been called The Word, and this is the first time I've ever had anything that has to do with words on my show. Maybe I should think of a different name. I guess it's too late now. Well, anyway, this is Half Jack by the Dresden Dolls here on KSFS.
Yeah. destroy me, but I'd sacrifice my body. If it meant I'd get the jackpot.
Back. That was Half Jack by the Dresden Dolls here on KSFS. Let me turn this down a little bit. I have severs. So I'm here on the studio. We just had a story. If you're just tuning in, you missed out on an awesome first ever recorded story by the famed Ventura County author Dallas Woodburn, whom I have on the phone. How's it going, Dallas?
Hi. So excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. The story we just heard by, called Numb, I'm under the understanding that you just were nominated for an award for that story.
Yes, it was just nominated for a Pushcart Prize, which is the Best of the Small Presses Award. And I'm really grateful to the editors of Monkey Bicycle online magazine for having so much faith in me and for nominating my story.
Wow, okay, and the story is up there as well.
Yeah, if anyone missed the story, it's up on monkeybicycle.net.
That's probably the least ridiculous name for a literary magazine I've ever heard. But
and
still,
there's a really cute little logo of a monkey riding a bicycle, so it's kind of worth checking out just for that logo alone.
I never would have guessed. All right, well, you know, actually, before we get started with anything, you should probably introduce yourself to our listeners out here. So who are you? What do you do? Who are you and what do you do?
Well, great. My name is Dallas Woodburn. I'm a writer. I'm the author of two collections of short stories, and my stories have also appeared in lots of publications. And I have a forthcoming novel that I'm hoping will come out fairly soon. I have a literary agent for that, so working on that getting published. And I think you mentioned earlier, John, that I'm also the founder of a literacy foundation.
I did say that.
Called Write On. So that's a cause very dear to my heart. And if anyone is interested, the website is writeonbooks.org.
Okay. And what is because I was talking earlier and I didn't know the actual statistic, because I'm like, I do a lot of research for this show, as you can tell. But what is that literacy statistic? Do you know? Is it?
Well, I've actually had kind of a hard time finding a definitive statistic for the U.S. Mm-hmm. But there's a really great site called Pro Literacy, which I've been doing some work with lately. They have lots of different statistics for different age levels, and they work a lot with adult illiteracy. But with the kids that I work with, a lot of them aren't illiterate. Like, they can read, but maybe they read at levels way below their age level or their grade level. So the goal is to try to give them some excitement about reading, so it'll be more enjoyable to them, and so they can start reading it at higher levels.
Get excited about it, bring themselves up to speed. Well, that's just awesome. So that's writeonbooks.org. And you also publish stuff by young writers. Does that include, like, people in college, or what is the age range for that?
Right now, we're working with writers ages 8 to 18, so elementary school, middle school, and high school. College is definitely a great idea and something that hopefully we'll expand to in the future.
Right.
But right now, we're focusing on kids, a lot of whom maybe really enjoy writing but don't have many outlets to express themselves. And as a writer myself, especially as a young writer, I experienced a lot of frustration getting editors to take me seriously.
Right.
Because I've been writing for a long time. I published my first book when I was 10 years old. So I've just really known that writing is something that I love. And I've always tried to approach it in a really professional way. And it was still frustrating that sometimes just because of my young age, I had a really hard time getting my work even looked at and considered. And one thing that I found was that I was able to write stories that other kids really liked because I was a kid myself. And so I took that to a new level now with my publishing company, is that a lot of these other kids have amazing imaginations, and they write stories that their peers love, and so that's what we're trying to do, is to give them an outlet to get these stories published.
Mm-hmm. Wow, well, so if you are listening and you happen to be, you know, of that age and you have all kinds of good ideas, go ahead and check that out, writeonbooks.org. But I wanted to talk about also the story that I played on the air here that you recorded for me so graciously.
It was my first time. I'm so glad that it worked.
Me too. It came out really great. Actually, if you're just tuning in, I should probably say I just played a story by Dallas called Numb that was nominated for the Pushcart Prize. And this show, by the way, if you're just tuning in, is The Word. My name is John Becker. Usually we're not as NPR-y as we are right now, but this is the KQED PBS radio hour right now. No, I'm kidding. But anyway, so we had this story about Numb, and it's a very kind of a powerful story. What can you like kind of shed some light on, you know, your process of writing it, where some of your ideas for that story came from, or, you know.
Yeah, I would love to. Usually my stories tend to start with a kernel of personal experience or something that happened to me or that just got me thinking about a story. And for this one, last year, around this time actually, maybe a little bit before, my legs randomly started going numb.
Oh, wow.
My feet, I remember I was walking around and my feet just felt a little bit pins and needlesy, and it was scary. And so I went to the doctor, and a lot of the stuff in the story really happened to me. Like, I went to the doctor and got neurologist did a test with my limbs jerking on the table and did all sorts of blood work, and then my numbness, it was spread to my hands and a little bit to my face, and it was really frightening because I had no idea what was causing it.
God, did you ever figure it out?
And they actually never found anything wrong with me, and then eventually it went away, and knock on wood, it hasn't come back since. So it's kind of still a mystery, but so it really got me thinking. You know, one thing they asked me was, is there anything traumatic that you've undergone recently, or something maybe this could be, like, mental? And so it got me to thinking about what is something that could happen in your life that would maybe make symptoms like these present themselves.
Make you numb, right.
Yeah, make you numb. And so kind of one of the themes of the story is trying to numb yourself to these emotional pain, but how it's kind of impossible. You know, those things still surface.
Right, right. And the more you try to push them underwater, I guess, like into the bathwater, the more you get numb, right? I don't know.
Exactly.
Well, that's really cool. Like, get that insight there that you were able to kind of take that real experience, turn into such a great story. Really kind of gripping the whole time. You don't even notice it. You know, you're listening to a story. I don't know where I was going with that, but
No, I know what you're saying. Thank you. Right. I appreciate it, and it was really neat to be able to read it out loud in that format, because I'm so used to seeing my words on the page that just being able to read it and share it that way was really special. So thank you for the opportunity.
No problem. I think you're going to be really popular with the trucker community. I know they're big on books on tape. So once we get Numb released onto a CD, you know.
You're gonna be golden.
Oh, you'll be
whole new audience.
Whole new audience right there. Well, if you're just tuning in, I'm talking to Dallas Woodburn, famous author, literacy activist, all around fantastic person here on The Word. My name's John Becker. And this is the last and greatest show of the word, and we're actually talking about words here. So kind of going off, I guess we've already kind of talked about how you wrote Numb. What is it that, like, is there anything that you get out of writing that you think is unique to writing itself? Like,
ooh, what a good question. I think for me, writing is my art. It's my way to be creative. And I think no matter what your means of creativity may be, it doesn't have to be writing. It could be art or music or rapping, like that wonderful track you played earlier. Or, you know, anything, dance.
Right.
I think it's important to have some sort of creative outlet in your life, just where you can really dream and kind of expand yourself outside of your own experience. And for me, writing is, I actually kind of had a little epiphany about this lately, because I've always really enjoyed sharing my writing with other people and right. enjoy the connections that I can make, and just hearing from people who have read my work and really enjoyed it is one of the things I love about writing.
Mm-hmm.
And I've worked with lots of kids who maybe are having kind of like behavioral problems at school and start writing or keeping a journal, and before long they feel much more empowered and connected to people around them. And so I think it's really healthy in those ways. But when I was in college, I was lucky enough to have Amy Bender. She's a wonderful author, and
I think I've heard of her.
One of the best teachers I've ever had. She her debut story collection was called The Girl in the Flammable Skirt.
That's right, I've heard of that one.
Yeah, one of my favorites. And she actually is having a new book come out in 2010, I think in February. So look out for that Amy Bender.
Amy Bender, all right.
But she's a fabulous teacher and really helped me grow so much in my writing and really start to appreciate not just writing stories with the end goal of getting published, but instead trying to just enjoy the creative process itself.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the important thing, right? It's the process itself rather than, you know, the output so much.
Yeah, exactly. That, I mean, it's a benefit if you're able to share your work with others who then are able to gain something from it. But I've really become more focused on just the act of writing, that I say now that I write to connect with others, but on a deeper level, I write to connect with myself, and that's really where I find a lot of the fulfillment from writing.
Right. In my gangster rapping career, I think I found the same thing, kind of similar, you know. No, but the best part, I mean, creating it is really one of the best parts. Just making it itself. I mean, there's a lot that you get out of sharing it with others, you know, but. That's really cool that you were able to have that insight, and I think it shows in your work.
Thank you.
But hey, thanks so much for calling in and giving us that story. It was great. We're running about out of time here on The Word, so.
Well, thank you so much for having me, and thanks for all of your great shows this semester. I really enjoyed.
Oh, you're a listener. Thank you. You're a listener.
Of course, yeah. I really enjoy your show. You always have great guests, and you're a great interviewer.
So you must be my one mystery fan this whole semester. Because I know it ain't my mother. I'll tell you that. She don't listen at all. She was surprised I still had a show. Well, anyway, Dallas, thanks so much for calling in. If you want to check out Dallas' stuff, you have a blog, right? That's
Yes, it's just my name, Dallas, like the city, Dallas Woodburn, Woodburn, .blogspot.com.
Okay, and then Write On Books is your www.writeonbooks.org is the publishing company / literacy foundation, right?
Yes, that's it.
Okay, well, that will also be up on my my little blog there. If you want the podcast of this, if you want to hear Numb again, it will be up at john-becker.blogspot.com. Probably a couple days. But I have one more question before you go for you, Dallas. And that is, how much wood would a wood burn if a wood burn could burn wood?
A wood burn would burn wood.
If a wood burn would burn wood. That's even better. Well, do you know how much that is? How much wood have you been able to burn?
That's actually really funny, because when I was little one time, someone asked me that, and I'd never heard it before. I was in, like, second grade, mm-hmm. and I looked at him, and I said, 12.
Well, that is a definitive answer. That's a definitive answer, 12. That's how much it would. It doesn't, I don't know how much 12 is, but it's 12.
It's 12.
All right, Dallas, thank you so much.
Thank you.
All righty. Talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye. All right, that was Dallas Woodburn here on The Word. It's about 2:58. We're just going to close up here. And You Don't Stop Radio should be coming on soon. They're the boys with the hip-hop flavor to kind of take the mood away from this NPR kind of thing that we got going here. But I hope you guys all enjoyed that. That was great. I've got 5 listeners now. What is this? Man, this is what happens when you have a famous author on your radio show, I guess. Well, I guess we're going to take a little bit of a break, see if the guys are coming in for And You Don't Stop, see if we got a few more minutes, see what's actually going on. I think I'll play some Decemberists.